Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We are the
Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to today's show of the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network. So excited if you joined us today for the first time. You have found one of the best kept secrets about tennis on the media airwaves. We try each and every week to bring you interviews with coaches, tennis players, tennis personalities in general that you don't normally get to hear from. And we try to give them an hour on the air to tell some stories about tennis, which is what we, as the hosts of this network, have grown to do, is to love to hear those stories and get the word out about news and important information. So it's not only me and my show, but there are other shows that we do. On Tuesday morning at 10 o'clock Central Time is Parenting Aces with Lisa Goodman Stone. There's American Tennis with Chuck Creasy, who comes on before that. Let me also remind you of Dr. Steve Clark. He launched his show, and that show is Tuesday at 2 o'clock Central Standard Time. My show, which is done at 1 o'clock Central Standard Time on Wednesday, and then we have the Florida High School Coaches Association, Tennis Coaches Association's John Denise, who puts on his show Thursday afternoon at 4 o'clock. If you're interested in talking about tennis for an hour each week, then please get in touch with me. That's how this has all started. We've gathered a group of volunteers here that love to talk tennis for an hour each week. You can reach me at jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. Again, that's jhaynes, H-A-Y-N-E-S, the number 10, the letter S, at gmail.com. So we had some interesting news come out just recently, June 24th. The 2015 ITA Collegiate All-Star Team was announced. And what's interesting about this is a kind of a reissuing of an old tradition that was slightly put away with a couple of years ago, and now they're putting it back out there, which is where they bring in these ITA honorees, along with the ITA Arthur Ashe National Leadership and Sportsmanship Award winners out to the U.S. Open. And they bring in 26 collegiate tennis players. And they'll have an Oracle ITA outing and awards luncheon that will be held at the Westside Tennis Club in Forest Hills, New York on Friday, August 28th. It's the nation's top-ranked men's and women's players from the year-end rankings, and it spans five competitive divisions, NCAA Division I, II, III, NAI, and junior and community colleges. And also receiving honors are the winners of the 2014 National Indoor Intercollegiate Championships and the 2015 Division I Championship. So you can tell that they bring in a lot of players to honor at this luncheon, and it's something that we are glad to see, because anytime you promote these interdivisional outings and bring in more and more experienced players into this setting and get them together, then it benefits all of tennis. And hopefully In the future, they'll put in a little playing while they're up there. It's a shame to get all these players up there together and not let them bounce some tennis balls around. But I understand with the U.S. Open and other things going on that it can present some scheduling difficulties. So hopefully in the future, with the new ITA chairperson and Oracle being a sponsor, they'll bring back more events like this, and it seems to be the case. So, okay, I think we've got Jeff McDonald on the air. Jeff is the NCAA Division I Women's National Champion coach from Vanderbilt to the Commodores, and we're going to see if he's here.
Yes, I'm here, Jason.
Hi, Jeff. It's good to have you on the air today and want to welcome you to our show. It's the first time we've had anybody from Vanderbilt come on, so congratulations.
Well, thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me. It's great.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about your school, about your program, and about that national championship run as we go through today. But, Jeff, there are going to be people out here on my show that just have no idea who you are. So could you give us some biography and how you ended up there at Vanderbilt?
Sure. I've been coaching college tennis for 27 years. I started at Louisiana State. I was there for 3 years. And from there, took a job at Duke. I was at Duke for 3 years. Very good teams. We had a Final Four and a couple of Elite Eights. Won the ACC 3 times. And then the Vanderbilt job opened up. And I knew it, of course, from my LSU years that I thought it was, saw this place as a sleeping giant. We're in Nashville, Tennessee. It's a superb academic institution, one of the best in the world. We're considered top 20. And yet, we're basically playing in the Southeastern Conference, which is professional sports. Our baseball team is playing for the national championship tonight against Virginia. So we have the opportunity to win 2 national championships in the same year. A year ago, we only had one, and that was in women's bowling. And then baseball won last year. Women's tennis did last month, and we're hoping baseball gets it tonight.
Yes, sir. We knew that whenever we scheduled this months ago or weeks ago, Jeff, that tonight the Vanderbilt Commodores would be playing for the Division I baseball, didn't we?
Yeah, we knew it.
Just happened to work out that way. No, it's got to be an exciting time over there at Vanderbilt. As you mentioned, 3 national champions and 2 possibly coming in 1 year. It's got to be a buzz about the campus.
Yeah, and what's nice is we're a small university, about 6,400 undergrads. We're a small athletic department. We only have 15 teams. You know, think of Ohio State has close to 40. Stanford has 37, 38. So we only have 15 sports. So there's some great coaches trying to win in the right way here and by and large succeeding. I think it's a really great time in this department.
Right. Now, Jeff, you as you mentioned, have been coaching college tennis for 27 years. You've spent 21 seasons there at Vanderbilt and playing in the SEC. And you mentioned that that's got to be one of the toughest conferences in the U.S., and I would agree with that. But Vanderbilt University itself is a very popular university. Can you tell me what would draw a student to Vanderbilt University?
It's, first of all, there's a tremendous focus on teaching undergraduates, which sounds obvious, but a lot of schools, the best professors are teaching graduate students, and many of the classes are taught by the grad students, so the undergrads. So there's a real premium on teaching. We've got small classrooms. One of our calling cards, I think, is personal attention and relationships. And our faculty does it. Our coaches do it. So we've got, I think, more of a developmental approach, say, from a tennis standpoint. We won the national championship last month with, you know, some players. They were all exceptional players, but they were not maybe the top recruits in the country, maybe one level below, but they worked hard and developed into championship players. So that's something we look at a lot in recruiting and talk about is we will develop you and work with you one-on-one here.
Jeff, what draws or what degrees would you say are some of the big draws for the students that come to Vanderbilt?
You know, I can't think of a weak one, weak department here. Economics is quite strong, English, history, our foreign languages, especially Spanish and Portuguese, are in the top couple in the country. It's just a superb education. Something like 75% of the classes, you'll have fewer than 20 students. So you're not in a huge auditorium watching a professor maybe in the next auditorium on a TV screen. It's a very personalized education at a very high level.
Yes. And your school is around 6,400 students. That is a relatively small school when it comes to major universities. But you have
right.
you have yourself situated there in Nashville, Tennessee. I guess the nightlife is pretty good there in Vanderbilt.
Well, it's a booming city. Nashville's we've got NHL hockey, NFL football, a lot of small universities here: Belmont, David Lipscomb. It's known as the Athens of the South. There's a lot of education here, and the music scene here is phenomenal. It's often compared to Austin in your home state.
Yes, sir. Now, your facility there that you have on the courts, can you describe that to us?
A nice thing here at Vanderbilt is, well, our athletic area is I can look out from the tennis courts and see baseball, and just beyond that, basketball, the gym, and to the left, football stadium. So everything's very tucked in and close. You know, you can hear the ball hitting the bat and the ball flying into a mitt during a baseball game right on the tennis court. So it's very, very close. We've got 10 outdoor courts and 5 indoor. The reason we couldn't get the 6th, we're in a city, so we don't have limitless land, and it was hard to – we just didn't have space to get a 6th court in. But the facilities are such you can be on the outdoor courts and walk and play. It's 50 feet from the outdoors to the indoors. It's very close.
Wow. And so you're able to host indoor events and outdoor events at the same time.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good. So let's move on to this magical season here that you had. And I noticed that you played 7 fall events. That seems like a lot for Division I tennis. So kind of can you explain your philosophy as to why you play so many fall events?
I'd love to have a good fall. I like to get each player the minimum from, say, 12 to 18 matches. We had one player get over 20 in the fall. That's pretty good. And then you know, I love the development. The fall is a favorite time of mine because you get to the courts early, you're there most of the day, you're a team, and you can often sit with a player and watch a match and coach her, talk about, you know, what are you seeing in this match? Was that the right shot? Why do you think the match just turned? Our player was up 4-1, now it's 4-all. What happened? And players, I love to talk to players while they're watching a match. I think they can learn an enormous amount. So that's one of the main benefits in the fall. And I think that if there's a problem in American tennis right now is we're not playing enough matches.
Yeah.
That just for development. I mean, I tell my players I'm not worried about winning and losing as much as get out and play, learn. Then go back to the drawing board and practice, but continually get out there and compete. It's very important.
20 matches in the fall is generally unheard of, and it doesn't seem to detract from your team play in the spring at all, does it, Jeff?
No, I mean, it shouldn't. You know, top players in the world, Federer probably plays maybe not so much anymore, but he used to be right around 80 to 90 matches a year.
Yeah.
And that's because he's so good and he's advancing to the finals or winning it every week. But if you play, say, 15 in the fall and you get in 35 in the spring and then you put in a good summer of maybe 25 or 30 matches, you're going to be developing really nicely. If you're working hard and working on becoming a better player, that's a good amount of match play to get.
And so with so many advantages to playing these fall tournaments, do you find your doubles teams out there as well? Is that a philosophy you use in the fall?
Yes, and I also like to change up teams. We talk about doubles being almost like learning a foreign language. You should learn, like I can pick up and play doubles with someone and instantly know where I should be going. So we want them to understand how to play with different people too, in case there's an illness or an injury or we need to, you know, change up the chemistry of a team or two. So we'll do that as well, and it also just promotes a good team, you know, playing with different people.
And you got finished with the fall. Would you say you had a successful fall season with all things that were going on?
I thought it was a good fall. We got a lot of match play in. I saw some really, really good development. And then a key in American college is when you break from official practice in the fall, what do the players do? Some of them need a break. Maybe they're nursing an injury and need a little bit of a break. But a lot of times when we're successful, our players are working very hard through November and December on their own. The other thing we did a lot of in the fall, we brought in a new strength coach, Emil Yankov, who was living in Austin for 24 years and was doing work at tennis academies there in strength and conditioning. And we hired him to come up here, and he began to do his work in the fall, and he made a huge impact on our team.
Well, that's got to be nice having someone that's a little more tennis-specific, right, Jim?
Absolutely. I mean, I've learned to be very discerning and demand a really good strength. It's such a big part of tennis, and he does exceptional work. And, you look at the tour, the top players train and work harder physically than the players down a level. And that's also true in college.
And Jeff, one of those fall events, did you happen to get kind of an inkling that it might be a special year, that you had a special group of girls? I mean, I know that each one of us at the beginning of the year thinks that we've got some good teams, but was there something
right.
that you saw at one of those tournaments that said, against some of the opponents, that said, maybe we've got something a little special
yeah.
here this fall?
You know, another thing we did, we brought up Jeff Moore, who formerly
yeah.
coached at the University of Texas, won the national championship two times, was, you know, very Hall of Fame, legendary coach. He's now doing leadership training and development for corporations, schools, but also for college sports teams. So we brought him up in September, and he has a concept he calls strivership, about you want to learn to be a competitive person. And competitive means the root of competition is to seek together. So competition isn't always, I'm going to beat you. It's, if you and I play, we're both involved in bettering the other person. That's sort of Jeff's theme. But it was important to the team to have a coach who had won the national championship, not once, but twice, visit with them, share his wisdom, and encourage them. He administers a test called the Striver Quotient that measures different relationships, relationship to coach, team, self, et cetera. Very good. So the players visited with him, and I think it kind of set the tone, wow, Coach McDonald brought in Coach Moore because he thinks we can be good. So and then he basically said to the team, individually and collectively, you guys are good enough to win it, but you need to do the following things. So that set the tone, I think, for the year quite nicely.
Yeah, and it got you into the spring and got them pretty excited. We've had Coach Moore on the air before. This guy, he's on to something with that Striver quotient.
Yeah, he definitely is, yeah. And I think more and more teams are hiring him. You know, the other thing he did for me all spring was serve as a kind of mentor. So at certain junctures, I would call him, and he would always answer and just was very, very helpful in terms of keep your eye on May, on being the best team you can be in May. Don't worry about a loss here or a loss there in the spring. And that was it was great to have somebody to talk to about that, because it's a very difficult journey to get to a national championship.
Yes, sir. I mean, you started off the spring at the ITA kickoff. You did quite well, and then made it into February and started to have a little bit of trouble with some of these California teams, Oklahoma State.
Yep.
Was this a situation where you started to wonder about the character of your team?
You know, not really. Indoors, you know, they were almost growing. There were some growing pains. We were 4-4 on February 15th, and we'd lost. All of those matches were extremely close, and we could have won them. But I knew the players on my team were really good people, and they were trying as hard as they could, and they needed me to not give up on them or not criticize them. But so we had a meeting in, I think, Los Angeles Airport, and I said, look, we're a teaching culture, not a blaming culture. So if we lose a match, let's try to learn. Let's learn some specific things we can do to improve our performance. And curiously, we don't talk a lot about to go sky high when the team wins and crash when we lose. I like to keep it in a pretty even range. And I'm much more about being proud of effort and competitiveness and having a really good spirit and attitude than just winning. And I loved the way we were competing, even though we weren't getting through. And the team really stayed together, and I think we had a very close win over Baylor, and that set us on an upward trajectory, and we just kept getting better.
Yeah, that came right after the 4-3 loss to Stanford after a run out there in California. I mean, this was setting you up, you know, after you got out of the indoors, you went out and played some outdoor tennis but didn't have much success, and then, as you mentioned, you came back home, and that started to turn things around with 3 straight home matches. Then you went away, you won another one. It wasn't until you played Georgia in the middle of March that you ended up losing again, and it was a close one at 5-2.
Right, and really, you know, player was up, it would have been, you know, it was close to a 4-3. But, you know, we began to get some momentum. Our practices got a lot better. The content of our practices got better. We taught. We kept pushing them, trying to raise their tennis IQs. Emil kept pushing them in the weight room. They were getting fitter and stronger. You get a little bit of success, and some confidence began to bloom. And you know, I think a turning point, we played South Carolina and Florida in early April. And South Carolina, we beat them, and then we beat the Gators, which is tough to do. They're historically the best team in the country, or right there with Stanford. Those are the two big programs. And we beat them, and that gave us a bit of confidence. We actually had a chance to win the regular season Southeastern Conference title, and we lost down in College Station to Texas A&M. Heartbreaking match, 7-6 in the third. Last match on our player had a match point to win it. And honestly, after that one, I felt a bit deflated. It's hard to get in a position to win the SEC regular season. But the team at point had a resiliency that quite frankly, was an amazing thing to watch. We beat LSU, and then we went over to the SEC tournament, and we beat Alabama, Florida, and Georgia to win the SEC tournament title, which is a feat that in many ways is mirrors winning the NCAAs. That's how tough a conference we're in. So the danger then is, are you satisfied with just winning the SEC tournament? And the team conditioned very hard after the SEC tournament, before the NCAAs, and that meant I thought we had a chance then, just with how fit they were getting and how hard they were working.
You mentioned your wins at Florida, Jeff. If I understand, you were miserable against Florida, like a 2-45 record before this year?
Oh, they're, and they made me miserable. Their had better teams. I mean, we all have made the Sweet 16. I've been here 21 years. We've made the Sweet 16 or better 15 times. So we had good teams, but those Florida teams were either winning it in the finals or a Final Four team. So they were a little bit ahead of us. We did do something this year. They've never lost to a team in the history of their program three times in 1 year, and we did that this year. And they were incredible matches, all of them. And they kept getting closer. But I know how good they are. I respect them very much, and it was quite an accomplishment to be able to get past them three times in 1 year.
Was there a loss or even a win during the particular season in the spring there that you again said, well, really like the way things are going here? We're rebounding nicely, or we're kicking butt the way we should be. Is there something that gave you a hint that something might be brewing with the Commodore?
You know, we played at Alabama and lost. The last time we lost to Doubles Point, that was in March. So we ended up going 2 months there without losing to Doubles Point. And they're a very good team, and we were playing them in Tuscaloosa. And our singles to beat them, we're down one zip, was just superb. We took it up a level, and that was almost a boost of confidence that we could win on the road in the conference against a really good opponent. And we improved significantly from that match to the SEC tournament. We went up a good level as a team. And some of that is just practice got sharp. People began I love practice. I love those days. I think the recipe for success in tennis is you compete, you pay attention to what you did well and what you need to work on, and then you practice the same way you competed. So you're one person. You're not, you know, I do this in matches, and then in practice I kind of goof around. We talk about just being the same person in both. And that's part of the maturation of a college tennis player is when they learn to understand that and do it. And our team did. All of a sudden practices got a lot better. And then it showed in our the way we finished the year.
You finished the year quite strongly, and I don't mean to. I know it seems that way because you won the national championship, but you really, once you got to the NCAA regional, you started to kick butt. 4-0, 4-0. Even when you made it to the NCAA championships in Waco, you opened with the 4-0 win. Was that because your doubles play to get you off to a strong start?
The doubles, you know, we began to play so solidly that it was hard to beat us. And getting up one zip definitely helped. But a word on the 4-0, sometimes those are deceiving because the other team can be winning the remaining three matches. So if they look like a very lopsided win, and often they're much closer than that. For example, Clemson in the round of 16 was a very close match, even though it shows up as a 4-0. We have a lot of respect for that team. You know, the Florida match in the quarters, we were down match point to lose the doubles point. Number two doubles was down a match point in the tiebreaker. Came back, saved it, came back, and we got that to go up one zip, and we won 4-3. So that's how close that match was. You know, and then the doubles point proved very large in the final as well. So
as you travel down, go ahead. I'm sorry.
It was Jason that we work a lot on our doubles and feel that it improves your singles if your skills in singles if you work a lot on the doubles.
Wow, there's no doubt about that. I mean, with what goes on the doubles court. Particularly women's doubles in particular, you can really help out with the singles. You don't see a lot of serving and volleying too much in the doubles. You might do it there at Vanderbilt, I'm not quite sure. But with a lot of the cross-court rallies, you can really get things set up for the singles.
Right. You know, I watched the Bryan brothers play the Italian team of Fognini and Bolelli. And it was exactly like they're hitting the ball a little bigger, of course, but they weren't serving and volleying much at all. There's a lot of one-up, one-back, a lot of formation stuff, which is a lot of what we're doing in college. It's just the returns are good. Volleying skills, I think, have declined. Even the Bryans don't serve in volley all the time. This was on red clay, though.
Well, I noticed through my years that coaches seem to have their most impact in the doubles. Singles is played with the heart, and it's a little bit more of a chess match, whereas doubles is a lot like tic-tac-toe. You go here, I go here, that sort of maneuver. Do you find that to be the case with your doubles?
You know, I think what we work on a lot is that each team has its identity. They know who they are and how they want to play. And really what's interesting is all three of our doubles teams had different identities. And I think one thing we do well here, my assistant, well, she's the associate head coach, Aliki Subanos, was a three-time All-American and got up to about 120 in the world in doubles. She was number one in the country in doubles 2 years in a row. So she was a wonderful player at Vanderbilt. But what we were able to look at the skill set of each player and plug that in the right way in doubles rather than insisting that people play one way.
Right.
We work a lot on lobbing. We lobbed a lot. We defended well in doubles. So if someone hit a good shot, we'd throw that ball up and make them hit an overhead and then get the ball back down at their feet. But you look at all three teams and they played very, very good doubles in three different ways.
You made it to the semifinals there at the NCAA championships, and you kind of got a little bit of revenge. You played USC earlier in the year and lost 4-3. What was the big difference in the turnaround in that match there, Jeff?
I think, we got better. The difference in the team in the middle of April to the middle of February, I think every player on the team was about 10% better. And we had a lot of confidence. We matched up well with Southern Cal. And, I think team success is driven internally by the players. The coaching has a role. But at this stage of the year, the team believed they were going to win. You could just see the confidence, and the body language was incredible to behold. They were not to be denied. We talk a lot about a great match is when all nine positions, three doubles and six singles, show up and compete every single point. And that's what and then if someone beats you, they beat you. There's no shame in that. But that was our goal, and we actually began to hit it from the SEC tournament through the NCAA tournament.
And so when you moved into that final match against UCLA, did you give a big pep talk to get your kids motivated, or was it a pretty easy day for the kids themselves to be motivated?
It's a really good question. I leaned a little on Jeff Moore here, and he put it very succinctly and very well. He said, let the horses run. So a lot of what I've learned playing and getting into these bigger matches is, especially at the end of the year, get out of the way a little bit, play your role. But we had a great team meeting where we discussed the importance of not playing the match all day long so that you're so wrought up that you're spent by the time you get to the match at 5 o'clock, to relax, take it easy. And we just talked about, we read something that Nadal wrote in his book about, I focused my entire being on staying in the moment and not dwelling on a past mistake and not allowing myself to go into the future and think about winning and losing. So that's what we did. And then we just followed our routine and kept very, upbeat and relaxed. And our joke was, we're just going to play another match in Central Texas.
Just another match.
I didn't want to make it into, this is the NCAA final. This is the biggest match of your life. I wanted to just keep it really even keeled.
I can understand as a coach you'd like for that to happen, and you maybe internalize it more than everyone else. Those players, must have been pretty excited to get through that USC match and overcome things and then make it to another. You got to face another Pac-12 opponent in the final. I mean, UCLA had been there before. This was the first time for Vanderbilt.
Right.
Did you notice any nerves or anything going into this, or a pretty confident group of young ladies?
Very confident. Not cocky and not remarkably, looking back on it, the lack of nerves of everyone. And I mean, by that I mean my, you know, Leakey and I as coaches and the players, you know, the match was a 5-hour long duel, 5 hours. And I had a couple coaches come up to me afterwards saying, I watched every point I could. I didn't see a racket never dropped out of your hand. No one yelled, and the body language was good for 5 hours. That's remarkable. But what I think, and the team, no one was nervous. No one choked on either team. And your point's a good one. UCLA, the group of seniors on that team, were defending national champions. Before that, they were Final Four. In other words, they were Final Four or winning it their entire careers. And this was the first time for us to be in that final. And I think we just focused on just playing a great match, just playing really good tennis. We talk a lot about making really good choices in shot selection. And then if you make a mistake, let it go and move on. And, you know, an interesting thing, if you look on our website, they have the press conference after. And I'm up there with Astra Sharma and Marie Casares. And this is maybe a half an hour, 40 minutes after we've won. And they weren't giddy. They weren't nervous. They were calm, excited, you know, happy, of course. But they just answered questions with remarkable calm and they were articulate. It's just fantastic to watch.
Jeff, was there a match that you – or let me ask you this. Are you a coach that coaches all of your team and just kind of works his way in to surgically get to a match that needs some help? Or are you a coach that sits on one court in particular where you think there might be a difference changer in a match? How do you operate in that final situation?
That's another really good question. A lot of it's knowing your players really well and what they need. Some players love to have you on the changeover and can process information and hear a lot. Others, it makes them nervous. They've got a game plan. Too much information actually hurts them. So you learn to know what each player needs. A lot of times I'll just go by, see if they need anything, give them a high five and say something really encouraging and positive. And, you know, and you see how the match unfolds and where you're needed. And my assistant and I just do it. It's a lot by feel. Sometimes we'll meet in the middle and talk. Hey, what do you think? I'll head down here. You keep an eye on that one and remember the game plan on number three singles, et cetera. But it's one of the joys of coaching. And it's what makes college tennis so unique, the ability for coaches to, you know, help players on changeovers and coach.
Did your team gather some fans down there in Waco, Texas, as you moved through the championship?
You know, we did. We met some phenomenal Vanderbilt alums who hosted us on Lake Waco on a houseboat. Baylor University did a really good job. Their hospitality was fantastic. And they arranged for every team, if they wanted to take a houseboat ride. And so we met these just wonderful Vanderbilt alums, and they came to all our matches. And, you know, I think the way the team carried themselves, we earned a lot of fans and respect from people down there watching tennis.
You win that championship match 4-2, Jeff. Did you get a Gatorade bath?
I think it was water. But I willingly ducked. It was absolutely a joy to get drenched like that. Loved it.
Now, not many people get into that moment. What did you, as a coach, what did you learn about being in that moment, that championship moment?
The importance of, well, first of all, it felt fantastic to see a team play the game right, in the right way, to play with passion, to play with respect, to make just to play the game aggressively and sustain that concentration for so long was a beautiful thing to behold. I think what I learned the most was the importance. I felt really calm, and I felt a love of for my players at the way they were competing. It was a beautiful thing to be a part of, and just unforgettable. So, what did I learn? You know, it's not something I had as a goal because it's so hard to attain, but I'm just really proud of the way we all carried ourselves in a pretty significant moment. We just played it with a lot of belief, and that was the coaches and players just really united trying to get a goal.
Coach, that brings me to an interesting question here. Now, I just want to ask you, just on a philosophical level, do you coach tennis as a team sport with individual opportunities, or is it an individual sport with team opportunities?
We do stress team, and I wanted everyone to know they had a role and a part of it. So we have 10 players on the team. Our 10th player, or the one who didn't make the trip, Peyton Robinette, actually had an opportunity to be an intern with her congressman, and I said, you need to go do that. And so we missed her there, but she was there in spirit. And we had 3 players not playing. Georgina Sellin served as an on-court coach and did a really good job. So she felt a part of it. We had 2 other players, Maggie Level and Ellie Yates, who'd had some injuries and weren't in the starting lineup, but they contributed a lot. The last day, they helped me find the Rafael Nadal quote I mentioned, and they Xeroxed it so we could read it as a team, and it helped in innumerable ways. And one of the things I'm proud of is every player felt a part of it. The individual stuff we say comes, it just comes. We don't focus on it obsessively. We play such a good schedule. You know, you noted our fall schedule, and, you know, we went to Riviera All-American with players. We went to a couple players got into the indoors at Flushing Meadows. And, you know, it's more about keep trying to get better and develop. And if anything, don't believe your ranking if it gets high. It's not about ranking. If you look at our match against UCLA, they were ranked ahead of us in every single position.
Yeah.
Singles and doubles. So, you know, we just say that stuff comes. Just try to get better, and, you know, lineup can always be difficult. But honestly, I had no problem with this group with lineup all year long. Nobody came to me and said, "Hey, why am I playing 5 instead of 3?" They just bought into the team concept, and the other thing I tell them is the team. The team experience is what you will remember. You're going to remember being with a group, and certainly this group will never forget one another. The individuals, you know, those are individual goals, but they're done within a team, within the team setting, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. Do you have a favorite team building exercise that you do with your kids?
You know, we really try to get to know them. I don't do any, and we will do different things. We've done, you know, ropes courses, and we've done some team building stuff. The Jeff Moore thing was team building in its way. And we recruit them, telling them this is what we're going to be a team. We're going to be a team, you know. And if you don't get that, this won't work for you. And there are other programs that emphasize individual stuff more than we do. And it's funny, it's counterintuitive because you think of it as an individual sport, which it is. But when you see a duel, it is very much a team sport. And you again, I think we did well because there was a bond among everyone on the team that was pretty strong. And in other words, again, going back to that press conference, they asked Astra Sharma, you know, you saw Marie tied up in the third. You know, what did you feel? And she said, I knew Marie would compete. And she this was the beautiful phrase. She said, that's where the trust comes in.
Yeah.
And I mean, I got chills when she said that. I was like, wow, that's
right.
Where the trust comes in. That's when you know you have an incredible group, when they trust each other to compete at the highest level. That's beautiful. Win, lose, or draw, that's a beautiful thing to be a part of.
And Coach, do you think that that type of attitude allows your teams to be successful?
Yeah. I mean, let's put it this way. Without it, you can't be successful, you know, at the highest level. You can't be. But if you have that, my point is that's a team. That's a player at number two singles looking down a few courts to number five and feeling an incredible connection. That's, and you wouldn't think that. You would think, well, surely that she's thinking of her match, doesn't even really know about that. Not only did she know about that, but she felt calm and almost inspired knowing her teammate was going to compete too. So the two of them lifted each other up, which is beautiful. That's great.
Coach, I got to ask, I mean, with all these, and you do a fine job of getting a mix of international and American players here, but we out here in the tennis world, we just don't see a lot of collegiate athletes, particularly on the female side, making the jump to professional tennis, and just as an opinion there, why do you think we don't see more of that, Coach?
There are a lot of opportunities college provides for you, and you know, young women often think a little more about, you know, hey, I'm majoring in econ, and I love tennis, but I can get a pretty good job doing this, and the life on the tour is pretty rough. It's a lonely existence. You gotta love the game so much. And I think sometimes college players are a little bit realistic and just say, maybe I don't think I can do that, and maybe they don't have the funding. I think more can do it. There's a young guy working with the USTA, Stephen Amritrash. He played at and he's the head of the USTA's collegiate program. I think he's doing a much better job of supporting college players and encouraging them to get out and play the tour. He's very upbeat, positive guy. He's doing a wonderful job. That could change. The other is, some players maybe just don't put in enough time or don't know what it takes to make it. I think on my team, I think Sydney Campbell can play pro. I think Astra Sharma wants to. I think Frances Altic. Those three. The others have been a little less obvious about wanting. They're talking openly about, hey, I want to play beyond college. They just want to be really good college players. They don't necessarily want to try the tour. But I think, you know, we convinced Astra Sharma to come from Perth, Australia. Largely because we said you can develop into a pro here, and when she came and saw what you can do in a day at Vanderbilt, she said this is tennis heaven. You know, we do individuals in the morning. She'll hit 7:30 to 9, go to 9:30 class, come back in the afternoon and practice. Then there's a great weight session. Then you study. It's a busy day, but you can get a lot better. I think too. That, you know, if you want to play pro, you need to pick a coach who's going to develop you rather than just use you to win. That, you know, in other words, be willing to, you know, teach you to serve and volley or to learn a new tactic, et cetera. And I think that's going to be a key. But those are the main reasons. The other is it's a very, very hard sport to succeed in at the international level.
Yes, indeed. Coach, you and the Division I people had quite the battle going on with scoring changes, format changes.
Yeah.
Can you help me understand your opinion on those that went on? Are you for a scoring change, or are you against it?
You know, I'm worn out by it. When I was in college, I went to the University of Virginia. We played NOAAD, and I got good at it, and then when I went out on the tour, we played regular, and it wasn't that big of a shift. If anything, you can learn some things in NOAD that make you a better player. Getting up, you learn to value each point. You can't let up. You learn how to play big points. There's some good things. I'm worn out in that I can see both sides. I like good old regular tennis. I also know that we're living in a world where almost every sport is investigating ways to make it a little faster. And, you know, look at the ATP Tour now in doubles. NOAD with a 10-point breaker in the third. If you'd have told someone that 20 years ago, they would have thought you were insane and it would never happen. But I think they felt on the tour, we've got to get this moving and we've got to make this super fan-friendly. So I don't mean to duck the question, but I see both sides, and I'm kind of ambivalent about. I do know we need to shorten the matches, but I still love good old regular scoring.
Well, Coach, you bring up an interesting point, and what I'm trying to figure out, and I've been interviewing you college coaches for quite a while now, and on this scheduling matter or the scoring matter in particular. Are you trying to enhance the fan experience, or are you trying to enhance the player experience? Because I always thought that it was about the player experience and the fan got to watch what was happening, but it doesn't seem to be the case anymore.
You know, a lot of this discussion has come up since the conferences have gotten networks. So you go, okay, great, the SEC network is up and at them. It's going into like 100 million houses already. It's incredible, all right? Well,
right.
Tennis isn't on. Well, then you go to ESPN, and who runs the SEC network. Why isn't tennis on? They say, you're too long. We can't, and you have six matches going on. You know, how do we do that? Now, I think you can do it. Maybe you delay it. Maybe you edit out some of the stuff. You can. But that, I think, spurred the whole discussion of how do we get on TV? And then as great a level of play as a lot of college tennis is, a lot of times there's no one there. It's not a huge fan base. And it should be because, you know, once people come, I have friends who come on the faculty or at Vanderbilt, they say, I had no idea it was so good. That was a blast. They loved it. Now, often they couldn't stay the whole match.
Right.
But I think the whole thing's driven by TV and then also a fear that as college athletics changes, as, you know, football's become incredibly powerful as a force. And I think you see on a lot of campuses resources going to football and being taken away from other sports. And you know, there's even a fear that the minimum number of sports that you need to have will get winnowed down to maybe eight sports and that tennis could get dropped. Men's programs have been a lot of losses due to Title IX and money. And I think there's a fear of, okay, well, wait a minute. If we get on TV, we're less likely to become defunct or extinct.
Coach, we've got the stipend issue as well. Will Vanderbilt, will you be participating in the stipend for your kids?
The cost of attendance?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, we'll do it. It's funny how if you look at how quickly that happened, and in a way it's a Band-Aid, but they're at least trying to do something. It's an expensive Band-Aid, but, you know, if you think about someone going to college and they're having to fly up in August, Thanksgiving, Christmas, back. You know, there are five or six plane rides, maybe, or long drives. You know, there's an awful lot of money being made in sports, and I think the feeling was the student athletes, you can surely give them a little bit better deal. It's still a full scholarship at these universities is a pretty good gig.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I know that the major schools, those kids get treated real well, but this issue with the cost of attendance scholarship is something that is really polarizing a lot of college sports. I mean, a lot of the smaller schools aren't able to compete with that type of scholarship adjustment. And I just was curious if you and Vanderbilt were going to participate in it.
You know, we are. We're in the SEC, and basically if you don't, you've just given yourself a competitive disadvantage.
Right.
So, you know, you have to keep up with the Joneses in a way. The problem right now is the power of the Power Five conferences is really hurting the mid-major and smaller schools. I don't like that at all. I think it's bad for our country. It's you know, the rich are getting richer, and there's an ever-increasing divide, which I used to think was one of the beauties of sports was, you know, a smaller school like Butler basketball getting to the finals 2 years in a row. That's incredible. You know, and Butler will hang on because it's a great program with superb support, but you worry about, you know, just smaller state school, University of Houston could get pushed out a little bit, UTEP, et cetera. You know, whereas Texas will be fine, A&M will be fine, you know. I don't like that trend.
Coach, you've got a great chance at repeating next year. Are you excited about what's going to happen?
Yeah, you know, right now I'm enjoying this win, and, you know, we're doing some recruiting. And I've learned early on that if I focused on something way out in the future in the wrong way, it ruined the experience for everybody. And so, for example, we're not going to talk about winning it again or repeating or defending as much as bring it back to let's have good practices and let's try to get better. And it's a very competitive world, college tennis. Let's each year is totally different. And, you know, this time last year I wasn't thinking, can't wait till we get to Waco and win the national championship. That was not in my consciousness.
Sure.
It wasn't.
It's a valuable thought not to have because too much overthinking in that instance can get you into a lot of trouble. And I like the way that you approach it with your team coach. And
thank you.
So I was curious, how long did you actually get to enjoy your national championship before you started thinking about next year?
You know, I think I'm still in the enjoyment phase. I'm the only thing I'm thinking about next year is if there are players here, working with them when they want, and keeping in touch with the other players who are playing some tournaments. And, you know, what are you working on? Let's get this a little better. Not. You know, let's talk about winning the national championship last month, and let's talk about winning it next year. But let's just have something go. Let's work hard today.
Yeah. Well, Coach, I appreciate you coming on today, and good to talk to you for the time that we've had today.
Really appreciate it, Jason. It was enjoyable.
Yeah, and I look forward to talking to you again soon. I won't make you think too far ahead, but next summer would be a great time to catch back up.
Yeah, I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, you bet. Well, Coach, well, have a great day, and I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay, thanks again, Jason. Bye-bye.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is head coach Jeff McDonald. Jeff is the coach out at Vanderbilt for the Commodores, the Lady Commodores. They won the NCAA Division I championship this last season, and I was glad to get him in here today to give you an earful of Division I tennis. We'll be coming back next week with another national championship coach, and want to thank you for this day, and I hope you'll get out there and hit some tennis balls if you can. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Warning. Orthopedic surgeons are seeing an increase in overuse injuries when young athletes perform the same repetitive stressful motions over and over. Pitching, tennis, weight training, even long swimming workouts can cause overuse trauma that may require surgery. If your kids play and train hard, visit orthoinfo.org or stopsportsinjuries.org. A message from the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons and the American Orthopedic Society for Sports Medicine.